Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, New York Times Radio, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everybody. So how do you back down? That's the question on The Takeaway. Think about it and call 877-8-MY-TAKE. We'll have your responses later in the hour. But we're going to step away for a moment from the news we're following in Lebanon and in the political campaign. I'm out here at Southern California Public Radio at the studios of KPCC, and I spent all day yesterday at the Serious Play Conference at the Art Center College and Design in Pasadena. And it was serious, and it was very playful, Adora, and it was actually quite fun. And one of the places that was focused on at the conference is a place where a lot of people do some very serious playing. It's Second Life. You know about Second Life.
We've actually talked about Second Life. It's fascinating, actually.
Yeah, there's 10 million people who have avatars and identities in the virtual world of Second Life. And on any given day, 250,000 people are in there buying and selling things, talking to each other, showing off, interacting, doing any number of things. And it's all a virtual computer-generated world.
That's extraordinary. 10 million people.
Yeah, it's big. But still, Philip Rosedale, who's the Linden Lab chief executive and the co-creator of Second Life, who we ran into at the conference and actually presented at the conference, says there are still two types of people in the world. There are people who look at Second Life and go, this is fantastic. Where have you been all my life? And then other people who go, this is creepy. I don't want any part of it. We've actually talked about this, and Philip Rosedale had this response to the two types of people in the world regarding Second Life.
Yeah, people are still just either, you're absolutely right, they're either baffled by the question of why one would create such an unstructured thing, or they're just totally along for the ride and get it from the moment they see it. And it's a challenge trying to get people to just get why it is that creating a virtual world is innately appealing.
Some of the people who do get it are people like, for instance, one of the most interesting communities founded in Second Life very early on was stroke victims who use Second Life as a place to interact with reality in a way that socially would be very upsetting for them, particularly recent stroke victims, because they don't necessarily want to go out, but Second Life allows them to go out and have a social life.
Yeah, there's just no question but that we can use computers and interfaces and technology to create a space between us, a space that we can enter into that is more facile relative to what we want to do day to day than the one we're in now. And that is just an incredible thing because it means we're going to move a lot of our intellectual and almost physical activity into there and not look back.
This week, Grand Theft Auto, it was announced, grossed $500 million in, I think, its first week of sales, which is a record for video games. It's probably a record for almost any kind of media. It certainly dwarfs what the movie industry has been able to do recently. Does it give you any satisfaction to hear that much of the evaluation of Grand Theft Auto doesn't so much talk about the game, the winning, the losing, the behaviors that you can do in the game, which are mostly pretty unappealing, but it talks about the levels of reality, the fact that there's like a TV network in there, that there's a cell phone network in there, there's a virtual internet network in there. Does that make you feel pretty good?
Absolutely. You know, there's this certain magic that happens when a space, when a simulated space has enough generality to be magical to us. I heard a story just the other day about Grand Theft Auto 4. It was a friend of mine told me that a friend of his who was playing it and loving it actually just decided to follow someone that had a virtual person, and you know, a virtual person, not another player, that had come out of a store with groceries to see where would this person go, you know? And he said the person walked down the street, walked down another street, walked and walked and walked, and eventually got to a park, and then turned around and retraced their steps back to the store because they were a sort of an automaton, you know, that was creating this background. And he said that the friend sort of said that the magic kind of cracked at that point for him, you know, that when he saw the person reach the park and come back, he knew that it wasn't real. But that of course, it seemed so unbelievably real that he was entranced and didn't even want to play the game, just wanted to, like, follow these little details.
Has the sort of fashion sense of your avatar, the physical qualities of your avatar influenced your choices in
It's funny you should ask that because I'm wearing a vest today, which is a kind of an odd, well, at least a statistically less normal mode of dress. I think that I have talked to a lot of people. The answer to that is yes. I have talked to a lot of people, though anecdotally, that have told the same story, which is that their ability to go outside their normal fashion envelope, so to speak, with their avatar does actually and unavoidably read back on their real life eventually. That is, if they spend enough time in Second Life and they're sort of, you know, dressing in a way that maybe is imaginative and a bit adventurous or exploratory for them, they do come back to real life and they're more comfortable with the idea of changing their clothes there too.
Second Life has certainly generated some headlines in the financial transactions that have taken place in there, some of the sort of sexual mores that sort of bounce around inside Second Life. How do you answer the criticism that an uncritical view of something like Second Life encourages people to kind of parachute out of the plane in terms of reality and maybe indulge in some dark sides?
Well, you know, I think that people will do things. I do think that people certainly learn from all the environments they're in, and habits can certainly be taken from one medium to another. However, the question one has to ask about sitting in front of a computer versus walking around the real world and interacting with real people is, I think the most important question is one of, is what you're doing more or less complicated? Is it teaching you things that are going to be convertible to the real world? Now, in Second Life, you're confronted by an environment in which 65% or so of the people using it are not from the United States. If you, for example, are from the United States, it's a very international environment. It's about balanced between men and women nowadays. You're confronted with an economy, a micro transaction economy that's incredibly rich and sophisticated, and everybody's making things and selling things. In short, I think of Second Life as a kind of almost a lemonade stand, in the sense that we want to have our kids make lemonade stands, where you are trying to experiment at being successful in a world that is more complicated, typically, and more diverse than the world you're actually in. And that learning, it's very hard for me to imagine that that's not a beneficial learning for most people relative to what they take away from it and go back to the real world. Now, does it allow you to indulge fantasies or jump off buildings or do things that would be dangerous or lethal to you or others in the real world? Well, yes, but it also, as a side effect, has you re-examining everything around you, I think, at a level of freedom and generality and clarity that you don't get out of real life. And I think that the pros outweigh the cons relative to its impact on people.
Sitting down with me out in Pasadena at the Sirius Play conference, that was Second Life founder Philip Rosedale.
I would be one of those people in the second category. I don't really understand. I understand escapism, but why would you want to create a whole separate life? Don't most people have enough going on in their own?
It's a question for everybody, but you can have a lot more shoes in Second Life, Adora. A lot more.
Thanks, John. I will certainly keep that in mind. We'll be right back.